Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Braintree Payments, a PayPal company. Braintree takes the payment burden off your shoulders. Braintree allows your customers to pay with credit cards, with PayPal, Venmo, Apple Pay, or Google Pay, all with one simple integration. From now until the end of September 2018, Braintree is offering special pricing and incentives for Magento merchants. Find the extension in the Magento Marketplace or call 866-365-7740 to learn more. And make sure to mention Future Commerce when you call. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
And we have another great show ahead for you today. Lots of fun stuff to talk about and some pretty intense stuff to talk about, too.
Let's start off with the lightest possible story that we could possibly find.
Okay.
In all of creation. we were talking about how you can take sort of mundane products. I think one or two episodes ago, you take sort of everyday mundane products, but you package them in a specific way that make people sort of excited. And you would never think that you could have product disruption in things like, you know, smelly erasers and scented markers. But that's happening. And now we have it in bananas.
I love this. This is the best.
This is the absolute best, most feel-good story. And it's all downhill from here. But the one-a-day banana, which is going bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S on Twitter, was shared out by Ian Bremmer, but it's a picture of a package of bananas, supposedly from Korea, South Korea, where they are in various stages of ripeness, and it's called one a day banana, and the first banana is perfectly ripe for you to eat today, and then for the next, you know, few days you eat a banana at a perfect level of ripeness.
Gwen Stefani was all about that idea. She was she's got a subscription to this.
Yeah, she does. Absolutely. What I think is actually marketing genius here is that the one a day banana only has six bananas in the package and not seven.
You shall rest on that last
you
day.
Will rest on the yeah, there's a Sabbath for the banana. I didn't realize that. But there is a day of rest in eating bananas. So that's a great story. Product innovation, even in produce, of the non-GMO variety.
Even in produce.
I love that. Do you eat a lot of bananas?
Enough bananas. When I was at Amazon, I ate a lot of bananas because they have banana stand on campus.
There's always money in the banana stand.
Exactly. I said that almost every single day as I ate my banana.
Actually, you know what? We totally didn't plan this at all, but I've been using two local delivery services. One's called Shipt, which I get the feeling is not a national service. The other one is what's the one Target uses? I forget. It'll come to me in a second.
Instacart.
Yeah. So I've been using those sort of like off and on to, you know, get groceries and some various things from, you know, local stores, which is really, really cool. I have a problem buying bananas with them though. I eat a lot of bananas. I will eat a banana as a snack generally once a day, maybe twice. And I usually put a banana into a protein smoothie of some kind, either for breakfast or for, you know, lunch or something like that. So I eat a lot of bananas. I feel like they don't know how to pick out a banana. As like personal shoppers just don't know how to pick out a banana. They always err on the side of too green. I would love to have the one a day banana because at least I'll have at least one ripe banana. But no, I always get this big bunch of, you know, of these totally green bananas. Anyway, it's a problem. The thing that I find interesting though, and where I think we're, you know, the problem that we have right now in sort of this in the retail delivery mechanism is things like produce are experiential. Like I know by squeezing an avocado that it's fairly ripe and I should buy it to use tonight, but I will never be able to communicate that effectively to someone else who doesn't have the skill of picking out an avocado.
Well, that's just training. I mean, that's simple. That's not actually that difficult.
Not oh, that wait, simple.
You squeeze them and if they are squishy, they're ready.
I don't know. I feel like there's so many different varieties of bananas and apples and various. It feels like it's a problem that needs to be solved. And it's the kind of thing that you don't think about when you're standing there looking at a banana.
Well, it depends on how much choice you have, right? Like if you, yeah, that's true. I mean, you could have instructions at every picking station, if you will. but
nobody's yeah. Nobody's gonna follow those instructions. Like you go to add the banana to your, you know, Instacart app, and it's like, here are pictures of various bananas. Which kind of banana would you like? And like, I'm selecting from a scale of the one a day banana. It's like I want a banana that's slightly spotted because I plan to eat this as soon as it arrives.
Or you can have like a banana workflow where like you get the bananas in at a certain greenness, and like you know how long. Actually, I wonder if.
This
one of day banana company, if they've ran some tests to see like maybe 6 days was actually the optimal time between green and yellow. And so like that was the most common amount of time it took for a banana to ripen from totally green to totally yellow.
Right. And seven is just a bridge too far.
Right.
It's like brown. The thing just looks pretty bad.
Yeah, it starts to get spotty. Yeah, exactly.
What's interesting here is that you've seen prepackaged produce, I'm sure, in your local grocery store, where they'll go to the trouble of cutting up a pineapple or a watermelon. Consumers have no problem spending 7, 8, 10, 11x what they would on a bunch of bananas for a prepackaged one a day banana, right?
That's, yeah, totally.
That it's crazy. So anyway, I felt like this went right hand in hand. I didn't expect us to spend 15 minutes on it, but it went hand in hand. With a couple episodes ago and sort of the theme there of product innovation. So
nice.
Interesting stuff.
Well, no easy transition from one a day banana to Rent the Runway. But since we've been talking about the secondhand market a lot lately, I thought it was interesting just recently. Rent the Runway is doubling down. Well, I shouldn't say that. They are already 100% in on used clothes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's just pick up another $200 million loan to increase its subscription rental business. And so I think, you know, basically what they're doing is they're looking to expand further, and they're seeing lots of strength, and you know, they're ready to keep pushing hard, and I like that. I think it's you know, it's smart because if they're seeing, you know, if they're seeing success, they should keep pushing hard. And it gives them more runway. So, you know, maybe they need that runway.
Runway. maybe if they don't have enough runway, could they rent?
Oh,
a runway.
I think that's kind of what they're doing.
It's interesting because I saw a post recently on Twitter that people are buying clothes more and more just to post on Instagram and return them a day later because they don't need to wear the clothes in, you know, in public to get the same sort of exposure that they would, or the you know, sort of social cachet, the social props you would get is, you know, if you had to like try to put the tag back on. It's like the 21st century version of, you know, wearing the clothes with the tag on and trying to return it afterwards. it's really interesting trends. And I feel like it just leads to it just leads to higher costs in the end for retailers that they pass on to the consumer, because you have a lot of inventory that's being worn in return, and everybody knows it was worn in return, but you can't really prove it.
That's the downfall of retail. People buying clothes, wearing them for Instagram. A day and returning them.
It'll come full circle when we have full shoppable Instagram, one tap to purchase, it gets delivered to your house, you wear it, you take a picture of yourself in it, and then you return it back to the retailer, only for someone else to buy it again with one
chicken
tap.
And egg right there. Infinite loop.
This is where we cue Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On. And that's just crazy. Absolutely not. It's funny. This actually leads into the story that I was talking about in the pre-show. Natalie Berg giving a really cool talk over at TCC Global in Barcelona. And there was this, somebody coined it as like retail Darwinism. But the idea was, it was like 20 minutes of her thoughts about the future of retail, which I always perk up. I always sit up and listen when people start talking about future of retail, because that's our shtick.
Right? There's a lot of that, by the way. There's a lot of that happening right now.
I know. Yeah. I got you. So this is sort of like one of those. By the way, I mean she's a retail analyst, just very well known. I respect what she says, but she had had this one phrase that I thought was really interesting. She said, clicks are looking for bricks, which goes back to, one of our recent shows. But what she said was in sort of the context of clicks are looking for bricks, meaning that there was a structural advantage that e-commerce had, 10, 15 years ago, where early adopters would buy from, online stores only. And then those stores didn't need, a distribution model or have customer engagement to warrant or require, the frontage that you would have in, a retail space to compete normally. But what happens is over time is you have big retailers that are also getting into e-commerce. Now they have a structural advantage over e-commerce in that they can acquire a customer who wouldn't otherwise, who otherwise has different needs to just sit around and wait for a delivery to come to their house, and they can go and try on the clothes. They can go and experience, find other products that they wouldn't normally find. And they have a means of, now they have in-store distribution and they're fulfilling from store, and they can buy online, they can pick up in the store. And so now they're actually at the advantage. So we're coming full circle on the right. E-commerce, being e-commerce is the death knell of retail. And that's why we have retail apocalypse. And her take is actually e-commerce is going to bolster the large global brands who actually already have the infrastructure in place to service.
And I think people have been talking about this for a while with Walmart, and like that's the advantage that it has coming up against Amazon. That's the one big advantage it has. It can basically look at Amazon and basically do what Facebook did to Snapchat, and run their spinoff brand Instagram, and then run Instagram Stories, which becomes their most successful feature but they've already got all the users. Like they have to do is copy what Amazon's doing, and they can be more successful because they already have.
And they'll be more successful. Exactly. 100%. And listen, we've talked ad nauseum about the jet.com and the Flipkart and the Moose Jaws and it's like, they've done a lot of acquisition investment in omnichannel and in M&A activity around e-commerce to sort of learn and absorb what e-commerce is all about, pure play e-commerce is all about, and then fold that into their store. And guess what? It's paying off for them. Their earnings came back. I think it was it yesterday? Gosh, I can't, things move so quickly. It's really hard to keep up. Massive growth in their e-commerce, which was a big flip over, I think, their Q4 earnings of last year, where There was some guidance that they would be down, probably based on some investments. Anyway, if you want real stock advice, don't come to Future Commerce to do it. What I'm saying is that when people like Jim Cramer are saying it's not too late to buy Walmart and it's, you know, at 96 and he thinks it can go to 120, that's a big deal. Walmart is strategically positioned to compete against an Amazon, where Amazon, you know, is at a structural disadvantage because they don't have the retail, you know, frontage that a Walmart does.
Yeah.
And as much as we like to brag on Amazon's distribution, Walmart arguably has a more incredible distribution network in that it has stores everywhere that, you know, that they've been investing in for 50 years.
Well, and think about this. Walmart is, you know, you can see what they're doing there. They are copying Amazon. They've got their marketplace now, which they're really starting to invest in heavily. Released their media group, which is competitive with Amazon's media group. Like, they're basically just they're doing exactly what we're saying. Like, it's on its way. Store number 9 or 8 or whatever it is. their future store. You mentioned Target earlier. I want to point out two things. We're talking about structural advantage right now and like, you know, delivery networks and things like that. Two things. One, Walmart all but discontinued its last mile program, which I found really interesting, where it had employees dropping off packages. And actually, it was shouting about this program from the rooftops at NRF last year. And it's pretty much abandoned it. There's only like one store that's still running the program, and I think they just found that employees really didn't like it. there wasn't high enough incentives. It cut into like their lives too much, and so it was just a bit of a non thing. The second thing I want to point out is Target acquired Shipt last year.
That's the one I was thinking of, not Instacart. Yeah,
Shipt.
Shipt is the one that I use more often. I'm sorry. Yes, I use Shipt and Instacart. Sorry. Carry on.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need to go back and review this because I haven't seen Target. I don't know. I haven't really thought of. Still haven't. I don't think of Target in the realm of Walmart and Amazon yet at all.
I'll tell you why. I mean, Walmart spent the entirety of the 1990s investing in rural America.
Right.
Walmart is almost literally everywhere in the United States. And Target is not, right? So I think that Target there.
Well, it was like
Target definitely has.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's not what I meant. In terms of like e-commerce purchasing, like right now, when I go to buy something online, I'm going to go to Amazon or Walmart, right? Like for your main items. And like, if you don't like what you see on Amazon, you go to Walmart.
Right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Shipt was supposed to be this like transformational acquisition where we're going to see same day shipping out of Target, and it was this big deal. And now I think all that Target has is free 2-day shipping on eligible items with $35 plus orders. And so I don't know. I just feel like it was a really big deal, and there was a big hubbub about how Target was now like actually going to be competitive with Prime and like all of this. And it was just like, no, not yet. No, not really. And so I just, Little retrospective there. Like, Target has not caught up yet.
No, and they're a long way from doing so. But you gave me the tit, and I'll give you the tat. Right, here's my take on it. Is there are things that I want from Target that I cannot get from Amazon, and I will not buy from Walmart. Just
what's the will
because
not?
I'm that kind of a consumer.
What's the will not on Walmart?
Clothing really is what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah.
I really like... In particular, Target's done a couple things really well. So Target rebranded its Mossimo and sort of like its in-house brands and sort of licensed brands into Goodfellow recently. There was another name for Target's in-house brand prior to that, which I can't remember what it is, but Target rebranded it as Goodfellow and sort of redid the whole line in a really modern lifestyle wear sort of take, which appeals to me. It has an aesthetic I like, but they recently redid another line of theirs, which they launched, which is a streetwear brand. And it's called Original Use, and it's really kind of competing with the H&M, you know, sort of streetwear, you know, aesthetic. And it's ultra affordable as well. And so from a, if I could go after, you know, if I'm going for clothing, if I'm going for, you know, locally, and it's, you know, I'm certainly never shopping on Levi's again. That's a whole nother thing.
Let's talk about that.
You know, big global brands are not living up to, you know, my expectations that Amazon.com has set for me, but for whatever reason, Target is. And I know that I can use Shipt, you know, a web app, and have Target delivered to me same day in my local town. I know that's not true for everybody. So I will choose a Target over a Walmart and an Amazon when it's something that I know that I want. If I'm looking for skinny jeans or joggers and I don't have time to make that trip myself, or I'm home and the kids are already in bed, I know where I'm going to go. That's just the way. Plus, you know, I can get a lot of other things. I can get some, get some ice cream or almond milk or whatever. That's sort of my take.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, I think, yeah, let's follow up on this and just kind of see where like the whole integration
landed. Yeah.
It is interesting because Target's kind of in the same position as Walmart, just not quite as strong. Like it has infrastructure. It has a fairly loyal fan base. It could come up against Amazon. I think that's why everyone was really excited about the Shipt acquisition. I think it's in line with everything we were saying about Walmart. We just need to keep an eye on them. I don't know. I trust Walmart to do a better job to compete against Amazon than I do Target.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Braintree Payments, a PayPal company. Braintree's payment solution qualifies you for an SAQ Level A PCI compliance and easily integrates into your Magento 1 or 2 store. Braintree helps businesses of all sizes, from small to large enterprises, accept and process payments, and is the payment provider behind merchants like Uber and Airbnb. By using Braintree, you'll be able to accept multiple payment types, including credit cards, PayPal, Venmo, Apple Pay, and Google Pay, all with one integration. Braintree also has an advanced fraud tool solution and supports 3D Secure. From now until the end of September 2018, Braintree is offering special pricing and incentives for Magento merchants. You can find the extension today in the Magento Marketplace or call 866-365-7740 to learn more. Put your business to work with Braintree. Once again, call 866-365-7740. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, E-M-A-R-S-Y-S. sys.com/futurecommerce.
I think we might have talked about this before, but just to reiterate, do you think that Walmart has lost its stigma about being like a predatory company that that you know you only buy the cheapest of cheap stuff at? Or do you see it as like a place where you can go to buy anything now?
I think it's more of the latter, but I still carry the, you know, 90s and early 2000s stigma of the sort of work environment and the minimum wage and, you know, underemployment, stigma. I still carry that around as thinking of Walmart and as that company. But I'll be honest with you, I really feel like the Amazons of the world have given them a run for their money. And so you think of them as, you know, as the scrappy underdog, and in actuality, they're not. Because the Amazon's created market pressure on them, and e-commerce in general has created pressure on them. They may still be doing all of the same things that, you know, they you know, got into regulatory issues in local jurisdictions and how, or equal employment. All of those things have been hot button issues in the press. But, you know, more recently we hear about, you know, Amazon workers crying and peeing in bottles and warehouses, you know, because they can't take a break. so that's what's more top of mind for me. But why do you?
No, I was just curious. I think I think that Walmart's losing the stigma, and so it's definitely now to the point where I think, you know, a lot of people look at Walmart as like they're maybe even like friendlier alternative to Amazon right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, they've done a lot of really interesting. Where, like, think about it like this, right? Think of how differentiated the three properties that we've been talking about are. I think of Target as, you know, sort of a higher end version of like a Walmart, but they also have, you know, the past 15 years have been really spent partnering with designers and bringing in sort of accessible luxury. And nowadays, like sort of appealing, like even more mass market appeal, like Chip and Joanna Gaines are designers at Target. It's just weird to me. Anyway, so that's how I think of Target. Whereas a Walmart, you know, apparently all it takes to, you know, change the minds of the consumer is to buy a Mod Cloth, a Moose Jaw, and a Jet.com.
Just billions and billions of dollars.
You know, and, yeah, it's just billions and billions of dollars of acquisition. That's really all it takes. And for a company their size, you know, very smart, very strategic investment. You know, on the e-commerce front, they and PayPal in particular have spent a tremendous amount of money and time changing the developer mindset and the e-commerce developer mindset around open source. And that Walmart and PayPal and a few others are pretty much the main contributors to a couple of projects on the open source front that run a lot of software. That are powering modern e-commerce like Node.js and some others. So their adoption there and investment of, you know, millions and millions of dollars and lines of code, you know, have changed a lot of developers' mindsets around what those organizations are and what they mean. So where you might see a Walmart as a traditional like SAP, you know, or Oracle, you know, backbone type company, they're actually investing tremendously in open source and contributing back to it. I think that changes a lot of people's minds. It's a very small audience, to be sure, but it allows them to hire the right people who are in e-commerce and who are the ones that are making the decisions that will guide their platform.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. Like the talent acquisition and, you know, even with Mark Lohr, it's a great example of that. Like when you bring those minds in, they're going to make the company be the kind of company that they want it to be. You know what I mean? Like it's going to change culture. It's going to change, it's going to change the way that they go to market. It's going to change, you know, their DNA. And so I think that's definitely happening. Matt Canet.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, I think very interestingly, those things are fascinating to me.
Well,
probably not to everybody.
There's two more things I want to really get into. One of them is a really natural transition, but I think you really want to hit on the other one first.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. No. You hit okay. the hit the natural transition.
A segue.
Give us a segue,
we're
Brian.
Talking about
I like a segue.
Amazon and versus Walmart versus Target, and you know, there was an interesting thing that came up recently. Scott Galloway, who is very critical of the larger tech companies, has been arguing that, you know, Amazon should be broken up. And Jason Goldberg made some interesting points about maybe why not.
On the antitrust front, you mean?
Exactly. Why? Yeah. And so like his basic idea was like, you know, if Amazon was the only e-commerce provider in the U.S., could they successfully implement a small but significant price increase? Or would competition from offline retailers keep Amazon's prices low? And that's the test of a relevant market in the U.S., in U.S. antitrust, which I found to be an interesting statement. You found that to be an interesting statement. You know, just thinking about antitrust in a digital world, you know, and what it means to be competitive and not competitive, and Amazon, which is not a pure play retailer, but you know, majority of its revenue is coming from online. Is that so dominant that people wouldn't just go to stores to make purchases at a certain point? Just because they have 44% of all online transactions, yeah. Which is, by the way, increasing as e-commerce increases. If things are on their current trajectory, I think there's a year in the future in which Amazon's total amount of revenue will actually equal all of its past years combined in 1 year. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we had talked about, you know, Apple becoming a $1 trillion company. So, I mean, are there more, you know, valuable or larger companies in the United States or in the world? Yes. But very few of them are in every area of influence in everyday life, right? From powering all of, I mean, the e-commerce that you're speaking of that Amazon owns, Amazon is likely running the infrastructure of the other 60%, right? Amazon is likely running the infrastructure of, if not the actual infrastructure that those other competitive e-commerce sites are running on, then the infrastructure of the complementary marketing services that they all use. So like it is so deeply ingrained. If Amazon were to go away, let's say if AWS goes away, we won't have a worldwide web in the United States. Like that is how fundamental AWS is. And it is the most profitable part of that one part of their business. So you look at the other things that they're doing, where they have a tremendous marketplace business. It's, I've heard people say 51% of, you know, all transactions on Amazon are, you know, fine. Okay. Well, I've heard other people say it, probably you, 51% of transactions are marketplace transactions. That's great. But Amazon keeps launching house brands that effectively, you know, that they're learning and competing with their marketplace.
Well, okay.
Competitors, like it may be selling batteries and USB chargers. That's fine. Like I'm saying, listen, selling batteries and USB chargers are not a sustainable business on Amazon. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But at the end of the day, they're into the long tail now. And they're creating more and more clothing brands. But, they're creating more. It's more aggressive.
You know, I actually don't see it as that different. And I think a lot of people are going to make an argument against this, but I don't see it as that different than a lot of retailers, generic brands like Target's got their Goodfellas brand. Like they're competing against I guess that's not a good example because they make all their own stuff or whatever, but or I guess they bring in a few things, but, my point is like, how different is this than a generic brand? Like, it's
It's fair. I think that's fine. And there are companies like Brandless who are doing it better. Like, what I'm trying to say is that it's pervasive in that they're not just in one or two things, they're everywhere. And fine, maybe they can't exert. And I like the thought experiment of what U.S. antitrust actually is, which is, do they have so much influence that they could exert market pressure? I think in one area, you have to start and you have to sort of wonder if Oracle can be found to be exerting pressure on their ERP customers and faced with threats of audit, so that they would have to get locked into long-term contracts for their e-commerce products. You have to wonder if you can exert influence in one area by having a leveraged contract or relationship in another. That's meaningful to me. It may not qualify for U.S. antitrust or to break them up under U.S. antitrust, but it means that they're extremely powerful. But it's not like we don't have choice in the United States. It's not a monopoly. But I like this back and forth. And if you want to read more, there's actually a great article over at Salon.com about it, which we'll link up in the show notes, because we actually
I think is interesting is if they should be broken up for a minute, like in this conversation. But I think the question is, will they be broken up? In the future, this conversation between Scott and Jason, I guess, it's just a little bit of a back and forth, but that's happening not just in the realm of retail. That's happening at a national level, I think. And obviously, a political level. And
sure.
I think the big question is not whether this is even like something that should happen, but people are discussing it across the nation and world. And so that's what I think is a bigger question for me right now, just because.
Well, there's only one other company that, controls, a majority of e-commerce, has, a speaker and a microphone and, a lot of homes, and is running almost, all of the hardware that you depend on the internet. And that's Google. And why do we not feel about Google in the same way? Like we ostensibly Google knows way more about us than Amazon ever will. In that we have our email with them and we use them as an identity platform, to Alan Nance's point in our last episode.
Yeah, so, and to be
a lot of interesting stuff.
And who knows? I still wonder what's happening with our Google data. When I got Google Mini, I might have talked about this on the show before, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I was absolutely blown away. I took a phone call on my Google. I made a phone call. Like I said, Google, call so-and-so using my phone number. And we talked about something that we had never talked about before. And then in a place that I never talked about before. And within an hour, I had an ad in my, an ad that wasn't just an ad, actually. It was a targeted email in my inbox from a hotel chain about staying in that location. Who knows? Maybe it was a coincidence, but that's just mind blowing to me.
Yeah. I mean, fine. Yeah. That's how it works, right? Like we actually say as consumers, we like targeted advertising because when we get random advertising, it's more annoying than having targeted advertising.
The data aspect is actually scarier. I think you're absolutely right.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Why don't we think of the new oil? I don't know.
Then why are we not looking at Google as a monopoly?
Yeah. Okay. This is great. Okay. And then on to that. So since we've already talked about all of the other scary people who have your data, let's talk about
Facebook. There's a segue.
So to kind of round it out, this was the last, we finally found the segue. again, there are other more journalistic entities out there who can do a lot more justice to the story. I thought it's worth mentioning at least, because apparently, I mean, this really, really matters in certain regulated areas, like housing and, you know, banking. But we may not be thinking about this in consumer senses. So Facebook was hit by a federal complaint from the U.S. Housing and Urban Development. And they were basically found in violation of the Fair Housing Act because certain ad filter options allow you to target things like race and religion and gender. You know, according to the article that we'll link up here, accessibility, national origins, parental status, those are all things that you can target with ad filters in Facebook. So I can create an ad for an apartment that I'm going to rent out, and I can specifically target just white people with it. And that is a violation of the U.S. Fair Housing Act. So Facebook is under fire here, which, listen, we all, if we're all in digital commerce, I assume that most of us listening are, we understand how targeted ads work, and we know that that's how it works. And now Facebook is going to basically, they said, listen, there's no place for discrimination on Facebook, and they removed the ad filtering options for certain types of ads for certain types of products. Again, those that are regulated in specific ways. So a good example would be housing, but it also, applies to banking or credit loans, because there's, there are laws around this. But I find it interesting because I've never thought about how targeted advertising could work in social media in a way where you could discriminate the types of products or the market
it's
to which
just
you would want to advertise a specific type of product to. It's discrimination. It's not targeting, it's discrimination, which I find incredibly fascinating and dystopic. And if we had more time, I would go absolutely crazy on this. But that's a scary thing. I don't really have much more to say about that.
Yeah,
I don't
it is
think
interesting.
We have enough time
about it. Like,
to get into it, but I want your take on it.
If you had an agenda, you could set your agenda by who you actually put your ads in front of. Interesting. Right.
I mean, this is the case for the U.S. elections in 2016, right? Like you find a particular audience that has a bias that you can target a specific message to. And if you're Russia, to all but a few people in the United States government, I think most of us care about this. And that's scary, but I've never thought about it in the terms of commerce, and how, you know, how we still, to be honest with you, there are we probably do this already, and we have natural affinity to do this
market segmentation,
in product
right?
marketing.
Yeah, no,
and it makes me wonder
the form of discrimination,
sort of
just in general, like not just on Facebook,
precisely.
But like in general. how far is too far? Like
So I find this. I would like to know. Maybe our listeners have some thoughts about this. I'd love to prod them for it. If there's any example of that you've seen, any example that you've seen out in the wild, we'll give this a think too over the next week or so, and see if we can't come up with some more. I'd love to maybe invite someone on the show who has some thoughts around this. But a good portion of the work that you and I do. It is recently around the Americans with Disabilities Act and compliance online. And we're seeing, if in some areas without actual legal requirement and compliance and regulation, we wouldn't have handicap accessible storefronts and government buildings. And that is a necessary and legal required thing. I think this is a good thing in general. And it potentially signals the future of where we might be heading, although probably not the near future, because we're very busy deregulating a lot of things in the United States. But I do see, a future where we're very concerned about the way that targeted advertising works on the internet, and we
I
might
think
be
the
in
Wild
golden
West
age of
was
it
a
right
while
now,
back. I don't think it's kind of Wild West anymore. We're in the slightly less Wild West. I think the golden age of advertising was when people could throw up ads and automatically make money. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like printing money. Yeah, printing money. 7-1, 8-1, 10-1. I've heard about those days. Actually,
sure. Well, thanks for listening.
Anyway, interesting
stuff. As always, we love your feedback.
Close this up, Brian?
So hop on over to futurecommerce.fm and leave us a comment or reach out to us on LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever. And, you know, also would love to get a 5-star from you if you love the show. Hop over to iTunes, leave that 5-star and, you know, and you know, if you during your day you find that you're busy and you can't click on the play Future Commerce button on your phone or wherever you press play, you can always listen just by saying Alexa or Google, play Future Commerce podcast, and we'll come right to your door. There you go. Thank you so much. Retail tech is moving fast.
Future commerce is moving faster. Thanks for listening. Bye.